few moments is try to expand your understanding and you with other individuals in regard to understanding that there's a lot of other things that produce loss and grief besides the death of someone. So think with me for just a few moments, and let's just sort of back and forth. Think of some losses in life that produce grief other than the death of someone. I'm sorry, what? Someone losing their mind, like dementia, Alzheimer, some other kind of issue, the loss of a mind. That's a great loss not only for them, but particularly for the caregiver. Don does a lot of research on Alzheimer's dementia. Alzheimer's is the firstborn of dementia. Dementia is the general word. And I think it's, 70 to 80 hours a week a caregiver gives in regard to dealing with dementia, in regard to the care for someone. 70 to 80 hours a week. So obviously that is a grief loss that is very debilitating, that not just affects the person, but certainly more so in many ways, the people that are caring for them. Other kind of losses. Health. We take our health for granted until what? We no longer have it. Anytime we lose our health, we lose what? Not only a way to work, but a way to move around. Many times we lose our independence because of our lack of health issues. Obviously, there's surgeries involved, there's medications involved, there's someone that's going to become a caregiver, likely to that individual who's had bad health issues. Again, we take for granted our health until something happens that it's taken away from us, or that it gradually happens, or our surgery, or no such things. So, and I'm sure your bulletin is just like our bulletin, full of individuals who have health issues. Remember, not only are they hurting, but everyone associated with them in any kind of way is hurting as well. That's a grief loss. Like Dr. Peggy Whiting says, any experience across the lifespan that demands the surrender of something personally significant and or familiar. Other kind of losses. Loss of a job. Huntsville is now the largest city in the state of Alabama. We've passed Birmingham in the 2020 census. Unfortunately, I have known of individuals that may have worked at Redstone Arsenal or someplace like that, and they went in on a Monday morning to their job, and about 9 o'clock they got called into HR needs to see you, and they go in and they sit down with some manager, and usually there are some security guards close by, and they will say something like this: "We are very grateful for your 30 years of faithful service to our company. Unfortunately, we are downsizing and we no longer need your position. Your job is over. Here's your severance package. You have until 12 noon to vacate the premises. These two security guards will go with you to your locker and to your places that you need to sign all these paperwork." That happens. And I'm sure it happens here just like it happens somewhere else. Question. When that person comes home, are they the only one grieving the loss of their job? No. How many people are affected? Everybody they know. Not just them, not just their mate, not just their children, their friends, their neighbors, even the church. Because, I mean, seriously, if everyone in this congregation went to work tomorrow morning and lost their job, would that not adversely affect this congregation financially? Well, sure it does. So the loss of a job is a devastating loss. And you know, we think that will happen to somebody else, but not me. Or, well, you know, but the point is, it's a grief loss. And it comes with all kinds of issues that have to be confronted and dealt with. Other kind of losses. I'm sorry. You go ahead.
Estrangement of
family members. Unfortunately, family relationships sometimes just don't work well. Or because of situations, or because of temperaments or behaviors, or people just wanting their, not only their say, but their way as well. There's a breakup of the family unit. And that hurts. And particularly when they're not willing to work together. They're not willing to come down and sit down and talk about the situation and work it out because we be brethren. I mean, there's all kinds of issues. And it hurts. Family reunions are no longer the same. Because you know that there's someone that's not there, not because they are not able to be there. They chose not to be there. I had did a grief workshop within our congregation, a grief support class, and one of the ladies that attended through a series of situations, and I won't go into the details, but there were horrific details of family members that had mistreated another family member, and because of that mistreatment, those individuals refused to, number one, admit they're wrong, two, refused to have anything to do with that family again, and blamed that individual who was the caregiver for all the problems that are involved. And they were grieving a multiplicity of things, multiple kinds of situations. And it's a terrible situation. If you've never been there, hope you never get there. But it's a terrible situation when families cannot get along with each other, or when people choose not to get along with each other. Someone said something over here and I didn't hear it. Yeah, loss of property through fire or tornadoes, down south, sir?
Repossession,
exactly. Not being able to pay your bills and your house gets taken from you. And again, you're saying, well, it's just a house, but it's what happened in that house that matters. What you did, I knew someone in South Alabama, lightning struck their house. And that individual for years blamed God for what destroyed their home and would not darken the doors of the building until finally, through the help of a wonderful Christian wife that was living Jesus every day, he saw and realized God wasn't blamed. It just happened, you know, just terrible thing. And he got his life right before he passed away. And I'm so grateful for that. But loss of property, because those are the things that we invest our time and our money in. Other kind of losses.
Rejection of your friends.
Rejection of your friends. Yeah. Think about today, where you're sitting there. Okay, let me make this easy. 10 people that way and 10 people that way no longer like you. In fact, they hate you. How's that going to make you feel?
Mad.
No, bad.
Bad.
Yeah, you might get mad too, and you certainly would be sad.
Well, you'd worry about it.
You'd worry about it, exactly. Because these are the people that you spent time with. Would it be 400 or 500 for you? You know.
Someday.
You know, the preacher is usually either the most loved or the most hated person there, depending on how long you preach or other such things. But you know, friendship. Think about that. I've often wondered how much grief David felt after Jonathan was killed. Remember how many times the Bible describes them as being sort of knit in one soul? I mean, and of course, he lost his friend through battle, through the enemy killing them. But it just must have hurt him terribly. Well, how much worse than that if it was someone that willingly said, I don't care who he is, I don't care for him anymore, I hate them, I'm not going to have anything to do with them. That's a grief loss, folks. And it's going to take time and effort, and it may be an impossible situation to ever make that situation right again. Other kind of losses.
Addiction.
Addiction of any kind, drug, pornography, other kind of alcohol, all kinds of addictions, pain medicines, just how, you know, Alabama's getting ready to start a campaign against fentanyl and doing everything they can do to make it, if they're selling it in the state of Alabama, they're wanting to just throw them away in the prison for a period of time because at least you got one salesman off the street. Well, I mean, terrible situations. And again, it not just affects you and that person that's involved in the addiction, it affects everyone else connected to them. Other kind of losses.
One of them is family, friends who affected more through the church, but just people leaving the church.
Okay.
Turn their back on God and leave the church. Would it be family or friends?
Apostasy. Yes. The loss of someone who used to be a member here or with my congregation, and they're no longer there. They may have lost their faith, and they say they have, or they may get mad and go somewhere else. They may just say that religion was false. It was, I don't care what you know, someone raised in the church, as we sometimes say. Apostasy. It hurts every single time when their family members walk into the building and they're not there. And they know where they are. And it hurts them because it reminds them of something even greater that's going to happen unless they change their heart and mind. So that's a terrible loss. And it's a continual one. And that's why it's so important for a church family to do everything they can do to help the family, because the family is doing, you know, they're doing the face-to-face situations. But anything you can do to encourage someone means so much to them. Other kind of losses. Divorce. Imagine a calm stream and you take a little rock and you throw that rock into the middle of the stream. What do you have? A rippling effect. And every single person affected by divorce is everyone that knows those two people, the family members, and everybody else as well. I had a dear Christian friend who went through a terrible divorce because her husband, non-member of the church, cheated on her several times. They tried to go for counseling. He refused. In fact, he mocked her, made fun of her religious faith, and finally they divorced. About a year later, they lived because of financial reasons. She lived in the same town. They had a little child, obviously custody issues that he would get to see the child from time to time. So that's why she lived there. But she came to me one Sunday and said, I do not wish anything ill on my ex, my former husband, but I wish I could go visit him in the graveyard. And I looked at her and I thought, what? She said, I have no closure. Do you understand what she was saying? In this particular case, she had a husband that was mocking not only her faith, her lifestyle for God, but was in that community making a mockery of everything that's holy and sacred like marriage should have been. And she was saying, if I could go visit his grave, I would have closure. We were in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and I was talking about this very thing. And this is what I said. Divorce is like having a funeral with an open casket that never gets closed. If you're dealing, if you know this church family has dealt with, and likely you have, Believe me, it's an issue that does not go away. Regardless of who's at fault, you've got two different entities that hopefully, prayerfully, you can still do good with. It's going to be a challenge. It's going to hurt. People's feelings are very close by in regard to what they were thinking. But it just remember, it's not just those two people that are hurting. It's everybody else affected by them as well. Other kind of losses. Health. Someone already mentioned that earlier. Yes, that's fine. Yeah. What about a pet? We lose a pet. Yeah. And you're saying, well, it's just a dog. It's just a cat. But more than that, isn't it? It's a part of our family. And when we lose a part of our family, we lose something. You know, I don't know whether you've already, I've written sympathy letters to little kids who lost their dog because I want them to know. You know, hey, I'm with you. We had a dog growing up, and when Dad called and said we had to put Heidi down, there were eight adults bawling their eyes out because we all remembered what that dog meant to us. So remember, that's a grief loss. Let me just mention a few others. Moving can be a grief loss. Because you move from something familiar to something unfamiliar. Retirement can be a grief loss. You're saying, how could retirement be a grief loss? Ask your wife when you come home how she's feeling. Seriously. Yeah, it can be a grief loss. Birth defects, sexual abuse, loss of credibility. Theft. You ever had someone rob you? That's a grief loss. It happened when we were in L.A., Lower Alabama. Someone broke in. They typed a note on our computer. Seriously, they did. Greasy fingerprints. They were able to get his prints. They didn't know who he was because he had eaten all of our potato chips. Before he typed the note, but on the note, he talked about how much he enjoyed coming into our house and breaking in, and that he'd be back to get more stuff. You think we slept too well, slept very well the next couple of days? Never caught the guy. The sorry rascal. But you know, that's a loss. It really is. It's a grief loss. Extended separation, military folks, ask them what it's like to say goodbye to their loved ones. Ask the families who are staying at home when their loved one's gone what it's like to deal with grief and loss. A missing person, infertility, PTSD, incarceration. Someone told me one time, the greatest loss in all the world is the loss of a loved one that you'll never see again because they're in prison and they will never get out. Think about that from their perspective. Here's the point. All of these that we've just mentioned, and I have a page full of others that I can mention, are all produce grief that's legitimate and validated, just like the loss of an individual. So what I want us to do is just be more cautious, our understanding. Be more compassionate when you hear about someone's loss that's other than the death of an individual, and think about, what does that loss mean to them? What does it mean to their family? What should it mean to me? The second handout that you have there in front of you, what everybody needs to know about grief. Don, you're my timekeeper, right? 20, okay. Number one, grief's a natural and healthy consequence that should occur when a loss has occurred in your life. There are some people that would say otherwise. They think that grief is a cop-out. They think that someone is weak if they're dealing with grief and they admit it. Personally, I disagree. And I think psychologically, I disagree. Research shows that. that dealing with your grief is a cathartic thing. It is a useful thing. It is something that people do to get better in regard to a loss that they deal with in life. But remember that. When someone's dealing with any kind of grief situation, it's a good thing. Help them, encourage them, as we talked about even this morning. Number two, grief affects a person with their whole being, emotionally, physically, mentally, and spiritually. What are some issues of emotion that people have when they're dealing with grief? Anger. I think Don gave the handout that has all the different emotions on there. Yeah, that's a good thing. And another suggestion that, and I'm sure FH can make a copy, is you could take one of those sheets. I think there's some back in the back. In fact, or they were up front. There, yeah, here's one. What I did with my class when I did it was I took this the first time we met together, and I said, circle the ones that you're dealing with right now and put the date down, and then just put this aside. And then at the end of my class, 6-8 weeks later on, I gave them another one. I said, now circle the ones that you're dealing with and see if there's any difference. A lady asked me, can I just make a big circle? I said, no, don't do that. But see, these are all the emotions that we deal with in life, in grief. And emotions are powerful. That's why grief can be so exhausting. I was talking to someone a few moments ago about they'd had different kinds of losses in their life, and they said it's just like an overwhelming flood, a wave that just sort of overtook them and said, I didn't know what to do with it. Well, that's why, because grief is so debilitating. Physically, how can grief affect a person physically? I'm sorry, what? I'm sure. Are you saying eating? Yeah, eating, not eating. Sleeping all the time, not sleeping at all. Just don't feel good. They did survey, they said a person that is dealing with grief physically sighs a lot. They just, just because they're just overwhelmed with that. Mentally. How can grief affect us mentally? Depression? Yeah. Ma'am? Sadness. Exactly. With no emotion. Exactly. Stoic. Just, hang on to. Grief can affect you sort of with a foggy mind. I had some of my grief folks said I looked half a day for my sunglasses. Guess where they were? Top of my head. One lady said, I paid the power bill twice. I didn't pay the garbage bill at all. I can't think. When I would do monthly support classes there in Evergreen, Alabama, I had a lady that was coming just to visit for the first time, and she just sort of sat on the outside listening to our discussion. And so at the end of the class, I went and visited with her for a moment. I said, I hope you enjoyed and visited or learned something from the class. She said, yeah, listen to them. I realize I'm not the only crazy person here in this town. She said, but I also realize that that's okay. I'm just dealing with grief. Well, see, that's the way grief makes us feel. It we don't think clearly. That's just part of the process.
Yes, but it could be, my husband lost his job.
Yes, ma'am. Right.
He had worked since
1947. Wow.
Never lost a job. Never been without a job. He didn't live a year. He just said he grieved himself.
Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. And that happens so often. Because of in our world of technology and other such things, if you're considered incompetent or because of your age or because of how much money you may make, they can easily replace you with two others at less money, I mean, it becomes a cost factor. I mean, there are all kinds of issues. And that produces terrible grief. It really does. Now look at the last one. Grief affects us spiritually. How can that happen? We can blame God for what happened to us. Someone asked the question in the class on children. There's a saying there, you know, someone will say to someone, I don't understand what happened to you, but it was God's will. Number one, that's bad theology. Number two, I don't know if finite human beings can understand the infinite, almighty knowledge of God. And I also would have to add into that Isaiah 55, 8, and 9, God's ways are greater than our ways and his thoughts are greater than our thoughts. When we say it's God's will, I don't think we have the right to say that because we don't know that for a fact. Remember 9/11? How many TV evangelists yelled and screamed that this was God's trying to wake up America? Well, if you filled in the blanks, it was like they were saying, God caused 9/11 to happen. Let's put the blame where it belongs. Satan and those who followed him in doing the terrible, horrific deeds that they did. And I don't want to get into political discussion or debate with anybody, but let's put the blame where it belongs. And I think God was the first one to cry when those planes hit those buildings and caused all the problems that they did. We don't know. We can't know enough to know that God, because God, there's a difference between what God allows and what God causes. And there are consequences for our actions. We have to remember that. Well, yes, ma'am.
Now, how can I make
it God? Exactly. You know, as we talked about and saying this morning, you know, the storms of life, God's right there. And he's promised to be right there. Number three, grief is always an individual matter. And we said that in a different kind of way this morning in our lesson together. No one grieves the exact same way as you do. Which means then, if I go up to you and say, I know exactly how you're grieving because, and I fill in my blanks that I think relates to you. No, that's wrong. I can't know how you're going to grieve because I'm going to grieve differently than anybody else. We're all made up of our own idiosyncrasies, our own makeups. I've got a handout that we don't have time for. 7 determining factors that determine how a person will grieve. And each one of them relate to you as an individual. So don't try to take someone else's grief away by saying, you ought to be grieving like I am. No, I can't do that because I'm an individual and I'm going to grieve the way I'm going to grieve. Number four, grief can be a multifaceted emotion. There are no real stage-by-stage progressions that occur in dealing with grief. In 1969, Elizabeth Kubler Ross wrote a book on death and dying. She gave us the 5-stage model of grief. She did that for patients in New York City or New York State in a psychiatric ward that were dealing with terminal illness. She said later on, I never intended for those 5 stages for those particular people to become the model everywhere. But unfortunately, that's exactly what happened. In the 70s and the 80s, therapists, doctors, counselors, medical doctors used that 5-stage model to refer to everything and everyone related to grief. Finally, someone realized, you know what? This person never had denial. This person never bargained. This person never dealt with depression. This person never got angry. And this person never, ever accepted the situation of what they were going through. Maybe there's something else besides that. Today, clinicians, doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, others, The five-stage model just doesn't work. It never intended, and Kubler-Ross said that before she passed away. She never intended that to become the one thing. So it does not work, and that's why Don said last night, we like phases, because phase is something you move in and move out of. It's a feeling, it's an emotion. In Huntsville, Alabama, we have the five-stage rocket of the mock-up that took man to the moon. Five different stages. Come see us sometime and enjoy there at the Space and Rocket Center. And of course, those stages did what they're supposed to do, so man got to the moon, what was it, July 28th of 1969. Well, those are stages, but that's not what grief is. So just remember that. Number six, grief, or number five, grief can be a different kind, can be a result of different kinds of losses. We just talked about that. You know, we all kind of grief is produced by so many different things. In the Bible, very quickly, the very first time you read about grief relates to, I think it's Genesis 28, maybe 38, 28. But anyway, Esau decides to marry two women outside the Jewish race. And the Bible says that they were a grief of mine to Isaac and Rebekah. Why were Isaac and Rebekah grieved about that? Because here were two daughter-in-laws, two, not one, who were raised to worship pagan gods. And they just knew, as we often know today, that that's just barring a lot of trouble ahead of time. But that's the first time the phrase is found in the Bible. Not dealing with a death loss, but dealing with a marriage choice situation. So grief can be a result of many kinds of things. Number six. Person's loss can be directly affected by the significance of that loss. Intensity or duration will be proportionate to the depth of the loss. Let me just put it this way. If you mention someone in the afternoon announcements this evening about someone being sick and asking the church to pray for them, let's just say Mr. Smith, Don and I will hear that and we will say, we need to pray for Mr. Smith. But we don't know Mr. Smith like you know Mr. Smith. The closer you are to the relationship, the closer or the greater the potential the loss is going to be, the grief is going to be. Think about that. In life, they're basically these kind of relationships. Mom and dad, husband, wife, son and daughter, or brother and sister. Those are usually, typically, the closest relationships we have in life. Because those relationships are the ones that we spend the most time with. So anytime we deal with the loss of a mom or dad, husband, wife, son or daughter, or brother or sister, or it could be someone other than that that's close, the greater the potential, the possibility of the grief is going to be. Why? Because of the love that you had for that relationship and for that person. If you don't mind writing there next to number six, put this little equation. Love plus loss equals grief. Love plus loss equals grief. The love you have for that relationship or for that person, plus the extent of the loss that you're going to deal with. What's this going to mean when they're no longer with me or now that they're gone? What's this mean to me? That will equal and be telling you why you're grieving. C.S. Lewis, children's writer, Chronicles of Narnia, also a theologian, also an educator in England, he said very simply, grief is the price we pay for love. Grief is the price we pay for love. The closer we are to the relationship, the greater the potential the loss is going to be. Someone mentioned to me last evening, my wife died. We were married 49 years. Well, think about that. 49 years of life with one individual. Should that person be okay 2 weeks later on? 2 months later on? 2 years later on? I don't think so. They're facilitating 49 years of a relationship. Not a perfect one, because no one's perfect, but one that they were invested in, that they were engaged in. The closer you are to the relationship, the greater the potential is lost. Love plus loss equals grief. Number 7, once a person has dealt with some loss in their life, they'll not be the same person again. Why? What does grief do to us as we deal with grief? What's it do to us? Does it make us look at life differently? Ma'am? A little more cautious? Yeah. A little bit different the way that we perceive things? I taught a class for a funeral home at the senior center in Huntsville, Alabama, Madison County. Every month I would go in and teach class, not knowing who was going to show up. One lady walked in one day and she said, "Is this the grief support class?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "Well, I don't know what you're talking about, but I got a question." I said, "Well, we're going to start in just a few moments, and so, you know, we'll sit down and we'll deal with your question." So when everybody got there, I said, "We have," and I didn't even know her name, and she told me her name. I'd never met her before in my life. She said, "You have a question." She said, "Yes." She said, "My ex," that's never a good way to start a sentence. "My ex and I were married for 42 years. And I'm thinking, "Oh, Lord, help me." Because again, I did not know her from anybody. She said, "During that time, he was unfaithful to me several times, but I took him back." And I'm thinking, okay. And she said, "And then after we got divorced, finally I had enough and we got divorced." And said, "After that, he started living with other ladies, right, relationships." And said, "In fact, he was at one of their houses when he died." And again, you know, okay, remember, I'm sitting here processing with people that are around us. And again, I'm just trying to process everything she's saying. And so I'm thinking, okay, he's gone. You know, I mean, and so she said, I said, "Yes, ma'am, I understand what you're saying." And I repeated what she just said to me. And then she said, "I am grieving over my ex's death. And my children are giving me grief." I'll never forget that phrase. "They are giving me grief because I am grieving over his death. What do I tell them?" And again, I'm thinking, "Oh, please, I got to figure this out quickly." I said, "Ma'am, during those 42 years, did you ever have any good days?" She said, "Oh, yeah, we had a lot of good days. He was a good provider for me, for our family." Said, "He was the father of my 3 precious daughters, and I loved them to death. Yes, there were good days, but he was our..." I said, "Yes, ma'am, you've already mentioned what else he was." She said, "No, so what do I tell my kids?" I said, "Ma'am, you tell your children to come back in 42 years, and you'll be okay with your grief." And she looked at me, she said, "What?" I said, "You are grieving 42 years of good and bad moments with what was then your husband. Tell them to give you some time." And see, that's exactly, and she said, "Oh, that's good." She sat down for the rest of the class and she left, and I never saw her ever again. But you see the point? She needed to let her children know, "I am processing relationships that lasted 42 years. I'm going to be different when I get to the end of the journey, but I need time because I'm processing this right now. That's what we need to understand. We need to give people time to grieve. We need to go along with them on their journey of grief. We need to let them know that it's okay for them to grieve. Number 8, which says what I've already said here, there are no real set time limits. Therese Rando, in her book, says as long as a person is grieving normally, they can and will grieve for a lifetime, and that is okay. Now, when a person begins to grieve abnormally, there are obviously red flags that we need to look at. But it takes time to grieve. It really does take time to grieve. We're going to take a short break. If you need to go to the restroom or just stretch your legs, whatever, come back. Don's going to be dealing with anticipated versus sudden loss. There's handouts for that. Have they been given out yet? Okay, they're in the back. FH, is that right? Okay, very good. And we'll be giving them. Thank you. Yes. Oh.
I failed to mention this morning, and I was told to do this, but I mentioned my short memory. It just continues. There is a table in the foyer that has some books and some materials that Ron and Don have written. I'm not sure what all it includes. They're not going to say anything about it, but it is there for purchase if you want to do that. But I just wanted to make you aware of it. So thank you. You can have a break now. Oh, okay.